What in God's name is in summer replay? Please enjoy this January 21st show, part two of a trilogy on rampant, unhealthy individualism in American culture.
So, hey, Chris.
Hey, Shayna.
You know how you're always asking me to sing on the show?
Always is an exaggeration. I think I've asked you twice.
You know how you're always asking me to sing on the show, Chris? So I prepared a little something for this morning. Are you ready?
Oh my gosh, I am.
I'm not sure
I'm ready, but I'm really glad.
Okay, here it is. Na 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 na, na 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 na. Hey hey hey, goodbye. Na 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 na, na 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 na. Hey, 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 goodbye. It is going to be a great day. Welcome to What in God's Name, everyone. He is Chris Owen.
And she is rock star Shayna Appel.
That I am. You have tuned into the podcast that seeks to go beyond the binaries of the political and the economical.
Political. I love it.
The political, which defines and unnecessarily limits so much of the conversation that takes place in our public square. What Chris and I seek to do here is to move beyond the political and the economical into the realms of the theological, the philosophical, and the psychological.
We're carving out a space also between or within, or use the preposition of space relationships that you like. Somewhere we're carving out a space between the programmatic secularists, often militant atheists, who say, no, religion should not have anything to say about our public life. We need to eliminate superstition and that kind of thing from rational discourse in public life. And on the other hand, the quasi-theocrats, who are more than happy to inject religion into the public square, as long as
so
it's
this is theirs.
Theirs.
Yeah, right.
So we say, there's a proper place.
We say no to each.
And religion has value to add to a pluralistic society and a plural public that needs to consider questions that go beyond the political and the economic in order to really consider human flourishing and what that means as we share life together.
Particularly as the religious seeks to answer the question, how shall we live together? I think once religion gets into the realm of trying to control people's behavior or to go overboard in the realm of what is valuable or right to me has to be valuable and right to you, you know, we have a problem with that. But yeah, also, I have a problem with it being excluded completely from the public realm. So there you have it.
We have a spinny wheel. It has 16 core values and key concepts. We give this puppy a spin at the beginning of the show. It sets up our show and gives us a little bit of a chance to welcome those of you who might be listening for the first time. We get the spinny wheel gives us a chance to let you know a little bit about what our show is about. And if you are happening to listen for the first time, we welcome you to our show.
I think it's your turn to spin today, Chris.
It is. The spinny wheel has a magnificent sound effect. It is the playing card, the ace of spades. Well, it's not the ace of spades, but think of the ace of spades. Whap, 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 whapping between the spokes of the spinny wheel.
And of course, the ever-present sprinkler head duct taped to said bicycle wheel that points to one of the strips of paper, which Chris, at least thanks be to God, finally rewrote so we can read them. That was such a good spin, Chris. You sent the papers up in the air. Politics is downstream of culture. Oof. Politics is downstream of culture. God, Chris, we could do the whole show on that. And I know we want to talk about toxic individualism. I am hearing a lot of talk in the political realm that is expressing shock over what was witnessed at our nation's capital last week. And I'd have to say that is downstream of culture, because for way too many of us, that was absolutely foreseeable, predictable, and even anticipated.
Politics is downstream of culture was a phrase popularized by Andrew Breitbart, which is probably the last time we'll quote Andrew Breitbart on our show. But there's an insight there in terms of politics being derivative of some deeper forces at work. And so it goes with our, you know, our opener, where we talk about getting beyond politics as the foundational way to try to understand what's going on in the world and really digging deeper into the spiritual, psychological, cultural elements of our shared life. Last week's show and today's show, we are responding to friend of the show, Margaret Beckman. Margaret wrote on Facebook a question for us, for all of us, not just Shana and me, but for all of us as we consider these issues and questions. The relationship of toxic individualism to strands of the intellectual tradition of conservative thought. Pause for a moment to make this comment. Many of you might not realize that there is an intellectual tradition of conservative thought, which was somewhat analogous to my experience in college when I actually learned that there was such a thing as intelligent Christians. So yes, there is an intellectual tradition of conservative thought. Toxic individualism, Shana, we defined that last week as the severance or the disconnect of self to a higher moral order. So when we're talking about toxic individualism, we're talking about that disconnect of self to a higher moral order. And in the intellectual tradition of conservative thought, I've named two pieces of it, but there's plenty more. But the two pieces we have named are a belief in the transcendent moral order to which society should aim. So there's some moral order, some vision of the good. What that is contentious, of course. No one person or perspective on the moral order holds the complete and final answer as to what that is. But nevertheless, it is put forward that such a moral order exists. So that's one piece of the intellectual tradition of conservative thought. And the second one I had named, this is all just review, just to set up where we are. A conservative intellectual tradition distrusts utopian thought. Conservative perspective respects the limitations of human beings and puts an emphasis on the illusory nature of human perfectibility.
So I agree with that statement. And if I'm sitting here looking a little shocked and awed, it's because, like, wow, haven't conservative, am I wrong in my thinking that it is the conservatives in this country who have basically supported and allowed and been, you know, the cheerleaders for big business, for economy? You know, economy is the thing that will fix everything.
I think that's a fair observation. And it is something that I was going to, I'll get to that. I don't want to respond to it quite now.
Okay.
My story of toxic individualism and its relationship to the conservative intellectual tradition. I've got five little pieces to it. The pieces that I'm going to name are not necessarily inherently bad. It's just that if there's too much of it, then it gets poisonous. A little bit like wine.
A little bit like anything. I mean, you know, anything in balance, right?
Yeah, too much wine, it's toxic.
Too much of anything ain't good.
Yeah, yeah. So anti-communism of the Cold War era has fed into the toxic individualism that we have today. It was the critique of the planned economy, which erases individual initiative, versus this rah-rah for the free market and competition, which rewards, in this story, rewards the entrepreneurial, creative individual.
But it supports those who work hard. Anyone who's willing to put the work in, according to the myth.
According to the myth.
According to the myth, yeah. Will do well yeah. under this system.
Yes. So that's one strand of where we are today derives from that anti-communism of the Cold War. Second, the 60s on the political left, the celebration of self-expression. If it feels good, do it. Today we see that in Burning Man. Do you know Burning Man?
Mm-hmm.
Out in the desert?
Yeah,
my dad went to Burning Man several times back in the early days. This is an aside. His wedding present to Eleanor and me was a picture of a bunch of naked people swimming around in the mud
at Burning Man. Yeah. Thanks,
radical.
Dad.
That's a picture of my dad for you. This celebration of radical self-expression. It's highly valued. Thirdly, Ronald Reagan. Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. That leads to today, this feeling, this idea, if it can be called an idea, any government expression of authority is illegitimate, gets in the way of my liberty, and my liberty trumps all, right? So we have these militias, the anti-maskers. The last one I'm going to name, which is, if people are counting, this is four and I said five, but I'm going to skip one. Consumerism that we have today. The picture of the human being in a consumer society is that we are, every person is simply a bundle of appetites to be filled. People who are making a lot of money in a consumer society are happy to have that definition because they're making a lot of money. Those of us who are consumers in the society are more or less happy to accept the definition as well because we accept this definition because it feeds our narcissism. In a consumer society, your job is to satisfy my needs, my desires, my wants. All of this together, in my telling of the story, leads to a toxic individualism. I think there's more to the story, but, I mean, there is more to the story. There's no question there are more dimensions to it, but those are the things that occur to me if I tell the story in a somewhat historical perspective. Cold War, 60s individualism, anti-government that really was voiced and embodied in Ronald Reagan's administration, and then the continuing rise of rampant consumerism.
That, first of all, I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, it's a brilliant assessment. If you were a therapist coming into a session of therapists and unpacking, you know, the screwed up family that you were working with and telling us all, you know, your hypothesis of how the hell you think they got there, and that was the hypothesis, and America was the family, I'd be like, wow, man, that is absolutely spot on. I am curious about the I don't think I understand quite. It's either I don't understand or I'm not in agreement with how consumerism has led to rabid individualism, because I guess my thinking is that, I mean, this notion that the customer is always right, like, is quaint, but no longer true in terms of trying to get service from anyone you work with. You know, we call, we get stuck on phones. It's awful. Trying to find a company that will stand behind its product. And actually, I think most of our listeners will agree, when you do receive really good service, like, that's kind of surprising. And if the consumer was always right, and this was all always about the consumer, then I suspect that would be other. I do agree that as a nation, our citizens have been reduced to consumers, to these sort of nameless, faceless consumers of products, which, as long as a company can make a profit off of, we don't really care what it does to the consumer. But I do think that, I don't think this is conscious at all, but I think that because I believe that humanity is created in the divine image, does hold the spark, is the divine. So if you reduce humanity and reduce humanity and reduce humanity, at some point, humanity is going to explode, you know, and that is not consciously, but unconsciously.
That was
something.
Your argument last week, wasn't it?
Kind of, sort of. That there's this unconscious rebellion to, you know, to not seeing us, right? I mean,
to reductionist views of the human being?
Yes. Yes. I mean, you can see it in the grocery store line, right? With the toddler who's, mommy, 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 mom. And mommy's not stopping and listening or giving this kid any attention. So it goes on and on and on until now we're into a full-blown tantrum. Why? Because the kid isn't being seen. You see it in family systems, too. We have something, we have people that we call the identified patient. So the identified patient is the person who's acting out or the person whose behavior may have brought the whole family into the counseling session, but they are acting out in response to something deeper that's going on. So I see this sort of toxic individualism as an identified patient, if you will. It is a response to not being seen.
And I think you've picked up on what I really feel is the most important element of that, which is the reduction of the human being to a bundle of appetites, which is it's a theological, philosophical point of view of who the human being is. And I just think that pervades economic ways of understanding the world. And so I feel there's a little bit of, I might name a little bit more complicity on our parts to accepting that definition of the human being.
Absolutely.
Like we just, it's just easy to, in our culture, to just fall into that consumeristic mentality that I am just a bundle of appetites and desires to be filled or satisfied.
And you know, I mean, look, not
which,
for nothing.
Can I just add this? Which leads to it. And if you are that, then you are by definition disconnected from some higher moral authority or from some divine image, to put it in theological terms.
Right. You are instead guilty of idolatry. You've attached value to something that is not of God. But I do think it is fascinating, and I just want to say, I mean, kind of like, you know, to give humanity a little bit of a break, it's like in theology and in the realm of religion, we talk a lot about action reflection, right? So we ponder, we discern what it is, say, that the scripture, maybe the history of the church, the facts on the ground, compel us to do. And then we do it. We take an action. And then we have to reflect on that action and say, did it produce the result that we were looking for it to produce? In the absence of that, we just go blindly down these paths and we consume, we consume, we consume till we and our planet are completely destroyed. What I think is absolutely fascinating is that the generation, three generations behind us that's coming up now are really anti-consumerist. I mean, they are, I think of my stepdaughter who's up in Maine living in a 12x12 cabin with her cat and has a car, and basically everything she owns fits in her car. She could pick up and, you know, be out of there at any moment. This real hardcore minimalist living with a profound connection to the planet and a profound connection to others on this planet. And I think, you know, that's that is potentially the pendulum swinging in the other direction, but they are absolutely very much more community oriented. So you start to see the realm of toxic individualism breaking down in the generations coming up, perhaps. And it might also be said that the whole struggle around climate change has brought folks together on a global scale in a way that we haven't seen before. And that trumps the me-ism of the 60s. It trumps the Cold War stuff. It trumps consumerism. And it trumps, what was the fourth one I'm missing?
Anti-government.
Yes, anti-government.
Let me more explicitly connect the toxic individualism to strains within the conservative intellectual tradition. So this responds more directly to Margaret's question. Libertarianism is that piece of conservative intellectual thought that emphasizes the individual. Also within conservatism is a strong emphasis on community and connection. It's what within conservative thought is called the traditionalist perspective, the traditionalist strand of conservatism. So those are in tension, the libertarian element of conservatism and the traditionalist strand of conservatism.
So would the traditionalist brand of conservatism be like what we call the Rockefeller Republicans? Those to whom more is given, more is expected, that one has to be community, right? I mean, one gives back, one cares for, okay.
Yeah,
the web
yeah,
of all existence, right.
That's a good, that's yeah, thank you. That's a great example of that kind of conservatism.
You have to lift up some example because, you know, some people would not know where to locate that today in what passes for conservatism.
That tension was encapsulated, and I just read this recently, but Bill Buckley, who founded National Review, his magazine, when Ayn Rand came out with Atlas Shrugged, National Review panned Atlas Shrugged. And so that might, you know, in our listeners and in people trying to understand what conservative thought is, well, they're both, you know, really conservative perspectives. Like, how would National Review pan Ayn Rand's book? And it's really because Buckley's conservatism was more traditionalist.
And Rand's
religious, but there's a religious component to that traditionalist perspective, connection to the transcendent moral order.
And Rand's was radically libertarian.
Radically libertarian. So that's just an example to say that yes, and any kind of political philosophy is going to contain these kinds of tensions that maybe can be held creatively over time, but also can lead to collapse, dramatically put, collapse. I mean, it has the seeds of its own destruction within it. I mean,
So here's a challenge. Where would the seeds of toxic individualism lie in the liberal branch? You know, I think that 60s, hey man, you know, it feels good, I'm doing it. And I think the extent to which many folks in the 60s saw themselves as, you know, radical liberationists, except that talk to black folk who were politically active in that time, and they have a very different take on it. You know, as popularity for the Vietnam War waned and black leadership called, you know, for America to bring the war home and to pay attention to what was happening here, that was the point where, you know, the white liberals were like, hey, you know, we were in this to end the war in Vietnam. That's over. We're good. Black people were like, well, wait a minute, man. We're still getting mowed down in the streets here. We're still, our communities are being gentrified. You know, toxic dumps are being located in the midst of them. Our children are, and white folks were not willing to listen to that. It was, I think, a radical libertarian, you know, this is all about me. And interestingly, you know, that group, the boomers, then went out and made a shitload of money.
I think that's a key insight, Shana, that the toxic individualism we see today, this goes back to politics as downstream of culture, the toxic individualism transcends political categories. I see it as a real feature of American society as it stands today.
So we are so broken, we are so divided, that I am just thankful that at least a conversation about figuring out a way to come back together is on the table. And that conversation has already started for us today as we, you know, discuss this radical individualism versus, you know, radical communitarianism. Is there a place in the middle? Can we begin to look for some middle ground in all this? And I think that's my takeaway from our conversation over the last 2 weeks is, you know, extremes in either direction are not, the extremes in either direction will move us. Ultimately, they do cause the center to shift. And so, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't think we can live in the extremes. I think we have to find a center ground in which to stand and then, you know, pay attention to the extremes on both sides, on all sides.
I'm wondering, and this might be a conversation off the air, and so this might not make the final cut of our edit today, but I'm wondering if we can do this one more week, because there's a theological perspective that I'm not sure we've hit on deeply enough in this conversation about toxic individualism, and that is what some people call the cult of the individual. And I would love to peel that back with you in a more theological way.
Oh, I think that'd be fabulous.
And then we'd have a nice little trilogy of shows on this topic.
It just does my Unitarian heart so good to know that we will have a Trinitarian collection of this. I would love to do that, particularly because one of my gripes with some sects of Christianity is the extent to which Jesus has become the head of the cult. It's so much easier to worship him than it is to follow him, so I get it. But that ain't the point, and that ain't gonna save your ass, is all I'm saying. It's just not. And it's honestly just pissing everybody else off, and I wish y'all would just hush. But there you have it. So yeah, I'm happy to talk about that next week.
Be curious, Shayna.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. Won't you join them on patreon.com/whatingodsname? Ask a question, make a comment on Facebook at What in Gods. Sign up for our newsletter. You can go do that on our website, whatingods.com, Shayna, which is
WHATINGODS.
You are a rock star.
You are a rock star.